Hello, welcome to the third episode of Studio 525. We're talking it live today with James Cox. Who's James Cox? James Cox is a very, very important man here at the Pleasure Beach. He's the director of sales and he's marketing and PR guy as well. He's a man who knows a few things. Now then, we're going to come to James in a minute. Let me just tell you, first of all, we asked you, of course, to send in your questions. Loads of questions. What did you want to find out about life here at Pleasure Beach? So what we're going to do is we're going to put them to James in a few moments' time and find out a few secrets for you. Okay. But first of all, back to my first point. James Cox. Who is James Cox? Hello.
Hi, Andy.
An important man. Who are you? What do you do?
I don't know about important, but I'm Director of Marketing, Sales and PR. I've been with Pleasure Beach since 2013, so 12 years now. I had more hair when I started. It's my job to look after the marketing team, the PR team, and also two of our developers who build a lot of the technology that we have out on park as well.
Now, let's just rewind a little bit then, because you're mid-30s now, aren't you? You started 12 years ago, early 20s.
22, I think.
So, what did you start
off as a digital marketing exec, and I remember feeling really hard done by in my first few weeks, because it was pouring down with rain and I was asked to go to IT and get some more paper for the printer, and I felt really hard done by because I was the digital person, I didn't print anything.
In a paperless world.
So I started off as digital marketing executive. And then throughout working very closely with the director of marketing, managed to work my way through and through the team into various different roles. And then in 2023, I was made marketing director.
That must have felt really good.
Yeah, I mean, that was I suppose, the aim at the end of it all when I started. Really,
that was your ambition to begin with, was it, to become a director?
I'd say so. I think the ambition for me in life is always just to set a goal and go after it and make sure that I achieve it. And so in my career world, having done marketing at university, obviously, what's the role you go for? It'd be a marketing director.
That's amazing. So, I mean, with that in mind, and we've spoken in the past about the importance of bringing youth to the table, the director's table particularly. Mm-hmm. So I guess you've been able to bring that perspective as well.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. I think I'm the youngest director. I might be doing some of the others a bit dirty there, but I think I'm the youngest. and so, yeah, I think what's important about the business at the moment is that we are going through, and I've said it many times and I'm sick of saying it, especially when the video in our office starts and I'm there saying we're going through a transformational period, but we really are. And I think part of that is because we are 130 years old next year, and we're very mindful of the fact that we cannot continue to do things the same way that we have always done them. If we were operating the same way we did 130 years ago, we probably still wouldn't be in business anymore. But what we're aware of is the fact that we can't stand still. We need to look forward, and we need to bring new perspectives, new ideas, new ways of doing things, operational efficiency, everything to just improve the business. And hopefully I can provide some of that along with the other directors, you know, our commercial director, finance director, ops director and engineering director, along with the family, to work together to really pull the company in the right direction moving forward.
We have touched on this, of course, before, where we talk about, like I said, a business that's 130 years old. Mm-hmm. It's always had something new to say in Blackpool all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's about jumping on the next trend before that trend has actually emerged, isn't it?
Well, I think part of it is to set the trend. If you look at 1994 and the big one, I think that is definitely a trend that we set for the tallest, fastest roller coaster. And that's what we've always done as a business. And when I say we're going through a transformational period, we're definitely not trying to abandon that side of our ethos and what we're looking to do. We want to, if anything, get back to that and get back to being, you know, one of the biggest players, not just in the UK, but in the world. In terms of what we offer as an experience for our guests, but also what we offer in terms of rides that we have available to us.
So what excites you about the industry?
I think I was never, and I think some fans might disapprove of this, but I was never a theme park fan growing up. I'm not scared of rides. I went to Florida when I was 9 and I went on everything that I was tall enough to go on. You know, I enjoy roller coasters, and I still do now, more so than I did maybe 10 years ago, 12 years ago when I started. But I never came into this as a fan. I came into this as an advertising and marketing person. I held another job prior to coming here, and I came into this as a business perspective. As sad as it sounds, I take enjoyment in business related things. I like having an idea, putting it into place, seeing how much money that idea made, and taking some pride in the fact that I was able to do that, more so than necessarily being a huge roller coaster fan. However, I think a lot of people will testify that once you start working here, and it may be the same at other parks, you end up kind of falling in love with the place a little bit. You end up starting to enjoy the industry. You start to say words you'd never thought you'd say, like RMC, or you know, all these.
What does RMC mean?
It's Rocky Mountain Coasters. It's a company. But you end up using all these words that you never thought in a million years you would use, and then you slowly, for me, I guess, you know, I kind of second guess myself and go, did I just say that? Do I know about that? How do I know that?
And you haven't become some kind of theme park business.
I'm not. I mean, if you compare me to Andy Highgate, you could ask him, Andy, where's this Gerschlauer coaster? And he'd be able to tell you the park, the country, everywhere. I couldn't do that, and I never will be able to. I'm getting better. There's a few I could say. But that's where I think it's good, going back to the board perspective, that you've got people like Andy who can do that and people like me who can't do that as well, so that we all deliver in these different insights and opinions into this business to hopefully make it a success and thrive.
And what's been the most memorable moment for you in your job so far?
I think being made a board director, so... interestingly, we did a presentation here. I did a presentation to the bank, and then Amanda called me to her office after that presentation. I'd already been made marketing director, but I wasn't on the board at that point. And then she went, do you want to be on the board? I said, yeah, go on then. And then she gave me a hug, and that was it. But I think one of the other memorable moments, I think, was in my first or second week here, I was at my desk, just, you know, typing away, and Amanda again came up, and we just got into conversation, and she said, what's your favourite ride? And I said, I don't know, I've not been in years, because before I started working here, I probably hadn't been in about 10 years. And she said, well, what about the big one? It must be the big one. I said, oh, I've never been on it. And she went, you've never been on the big one? I said, no, I've never been on the big one.
At which point she dragged you on it, did she?
She went, right, lock your computer. Go to the big one, go to the front of the queue, tell them who you are and say you need to go on it. Yes. And then obviously I was only 22, 23 at the time, so locked the computer, ran down to the big one and off I went onto the big one. So yeah, I think that's kind of a memorable one, yeah.
Mm. It's that fun aspect of it, isn't it? That you get a chance, like you say, to lock your computer and go rush off down the other end of the park and have a go on a ride.
It's, yeah, I mean...
Not many people can say they can do that in the workday.
No, absolutely not. And I think I've mentioned that before when we've gone out as a team, maybe for lunch on part of the marketing team. You know, I remember a few years ago, we had our lunch in 10 minutes. We were like, what do we do now for the rest of the lunch? So we did go on a few rides. And I remember saying, like, it's mad, isn't it? Like, there's no other place in the world where you'd be able to go for your lunch and just hop on a few rides and go back to your desk and you've done nothing wrong.
That's Blackpool.
It is, yeah.
Absolutely. Right, well, I mean, I could chat with James all day about James. I'm sure James would absolutely love that. But we've got to move on because we've got your questions and James is going to do his best to answer these. Because, like I say, you've sent in some of the questions that you want to know answers to some of the secrets that we have here. Are they really secrets? Are they just behind-the-scenes things that we haven't quite revealed yet? Are we lifting the curtain on the magic? Well, we'll see. Let's have a look, first of all, then. So the first one comes in from Topower2007, who asks, why do roller coasters, the ones that are capable of running 2+ trains, sometimes only run on one train?
Okay, so the reason you would run a roller coaster on two trains, primarily from a business perspective, is guest experience to alleviate queue times on busier days. However, there are some days throughout our season, for example, midweeks in May or September, and I'm sure in the comments people will say, what about June? I know they've been on one train in June. But there are some days where we will have the option to run two, but purposefully run one. And that's not because we're trying to do anything to make anyone's day less enjoyable, but just from a business perspective, you know, we have to run as a business. We have to make money to enable our to secure our future, to enable our future, to enable a reinvestment in new rides, new thrilling rides. And so it comes down to a business decision primarily. There is a number of people that when they are on the park, there is one train is sufficient enough to enable that queue time to still be fairly low. Granted, it would be lower on two trains, but to have two trains means more engineering checks, additional operators normally. And so those costs of doing that add up. And there are days where, you know, it just doesn't make sense to do that when looking at it from a commercial standpoint. And there are days where it absolutely does. And when it does, we will always envisage and enable us to get onto two trains. And I know, again, people will say, well, I've been on days where there should have been two and there's maybe only been one. But sometimes that train may be in for repair. It may be in for its annual maintenance programme. And I think that the key thing is it's never done intentionally to damage anyone's day or to increase queue times. There's always a legitimate either business engineering reason, because it might be part of its annual maintenance at that time. And, you know, we don't turn around and say, it's on one train today because it's in for maintenance on its annual maintenance programme. It's having this done and that done and that done. We don't over-explain ourselves. And it's, again, you know, it's because to the general public, to the mass majority of guests, they won't know what an annual maintenance programme is. So we don't necessarily go into that much detail to tell them. We just try and be good communicators of queue lines, which we've done as part of our app. We've updated that in recent last 2 weeks to hopefully show queue lines more accurately, as well as the open and close times of that ride. And we also try to be more on top of the messaging we have. So, for example, if the big one's closed due to high winds, we will put a message on to say that. Going back 4 or 5 years, we didn't have that. We never talked about queue lines. We never had them visible anywhere. And the only way you would find out the big one was closed would be walking up to it and looking up at it and going, that's not open. So we do have a role to play in terms of making sure that we can communicate and manage expectation as best as we can. That's why we do what we do in the app nowadays.
So let's move on to our next question then. And it comes from Sam Costello. Sam, thank you very much for writing in. And the question is, and I think he wants to be here, would you ever invite content creators onto the podcast?
I think the answer is yes. We're probably not at the point where we will do just yet. We've got I think we're on to episode 3 now. So we've got the next 7 episodes of guests lined up. We've got plans to invite some people from within the industry wider afield than Pleasure Beach. So from Europe and potentially internationally on. And I think I've got an idea of a game I'd like to do between some enthusiasts, for example, like a little quiz as part of a podcast episode. So, yeah, there's definitely plans. Nothing in concrete at the moment, but definitely some plans in the future.
Well, there you are, Sam. You could be sitting right opposite me before you know it. Let's see what happens. Cowboy Rocky West. My goodness me, there's some magnificent names on the air today. He asks, when will the Thrill-O-Matic be updated and when will we be able to ride?
Okay, so when I saw that one, I had to go speak to Adam Slevin. So we are, at the moment, we're working with Aardman. Obviously, because it's a ride that works with an IP, we have to make sure that they are approving of everything that we do. Obviously, they are approving of the changes. We've been through that. But as things get designed and brought here to park for installation and for excellent work through our paint and model shop team, we have to work with Aardman throughout that. And that's the process we're in at the moment. But I've been assured that the Thrill-O-Matic will have its new bits and pieces, to not give too much away, in place for summer.
Matthew Powell, hello Matthew, thanks a lot for writing in. Will Pleasure Beach Resort hold a high record again? And what does 10 years down the line look like for Pleasure Beach? That's two questions.
Yeah, I think I'd be speaking a bit above my pay grade to say that we will definitely have a new world record for a high. I think one of the things that we do speak about here, and Amanda mentioned it on her podcast, is we've got to aim high regardless of whether we go for the world height or not. And so the next, you know, we're very aware of the impact the big one had in 1994. And we know that we need to continue to deliver some groundbreaking world record holding rides. Now, whether that would be high or not, I don't know. And what it would be, I'm not entirely certain. But I know for definite that it is on the Amanda's radar and agenda that we want to, you know, we want to break some records at some point, yeah.
There is a limit, of course, as to how high you can go, because we're right next to the airport.
There is, yeah. But we've got a good relationship with the airport, so we had to speak to them about, obviously, the big one.
Which has lights on it, of course.
It does, it does, beacons to make sure that the incoming aircraft see it. But, yeah, we try not to let things like that pull us back. We aim for the stars first and then get over any obstacles that are in our way. And then Pleasure Beach in 10 years. There's lots of plans. And again, I think Amanda mentioned this in her podcast, but we have to, as a business, look forward to the future. Ride manufacturers' books work 2 or 3 years in advance. So we, as a business, need to be thinking at least 2 or 3 years in advance. And at the moment, we're trying to look, you know, in the next 5 or 10 years. So there's definitely a plan, and it's definitely exciting. And that's hopefully the common thread you'll have seen in the marketing that we've done with the season launch, with the various other updates we've given. You know, there's a very exciting plan there. There's obviously new rides as part of that plan.
Well, talking about new rides, let's talk about the gyro swing ride. And we have a note in from Attractions Near Me, who asks, will it swing? Now, I've been wondering about this one as well. Will it swing towards Infusion, or will it go across the road towards the sea? Will it go across the prom?
It won't go across the prom, no. So it'll swing towards Infusion. And again, that's quite purposeful. So when we were thinking of where this ride would go, we wanted to make sure that it was visible from the outside. So one of the famous quotes that relates again to the big one is that when we built the big one, the skyline changed. And so we wanted to make sure that the skyline would change again. So you'll see it yourself, I'm from Blackpool, walking down the prom, that when the big one is near the top, everyone stops, stands, looks up in awe and watches it go over. And we wanted to make sure that there was something for people to see on that promenade as it was swinging, that they stop, stand, look in awe, and hopefully point at it and go, Mum, Dad, I want to go on that. Yeah. And so that's why the purposeful decision to have it that way, so it's got maximum impact from the promenade, was made.
Right, on to our next question then. And here's a fantastic name. We've got George's Theme Park Adventures, which sounds exciting, who writes in and says, with heritage being such a big part of Pleasure Beach, how do you strike that balance between renovating old rides and modernising the park? And I think Amanda's spoken on this as well, hasn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, yeah. I think the key word there is balance. We can't focus purely on our heritage because, as Amanda said, you know, heritage isn't necessarily sexy anymore in terms of what the younger generation, Gen Zs, etc., are looking for in a theme park.
Well, it's not a museum, is it?
And we're not a museum, no. But that being said, you know, the same family have owned the park for 130 years, and those rides hold a very dear place in the heart of the family and the owners, and us, you know, the directors and everyone who works here and has maintained them. There's some engineers who've worked on those rides 40 years. So it is a balance, and it is important that we continue to maintain them. We always have done. And I think with our reimagining programme now, that provides opportunities for the preservation of and the investment into some of our older rides. I mean, you know, we talk about old rides, but some of them are still, you know, still great. Revolution, Steeplechase, various, you know, they've been here a long time, but they still pack a punch in terms of their thrill factor. And so obviously we want to preserve that and, you know, make sure that we invest in that, enable them to continue many years into the future. But we're very aware, particularly in my job as marketing, that the most, you know, my job is to get people here. And it's a lot easier when we've got a new ride. So, you know, I'm always pushing for a new ride, and always will be. So it is about balance, and it is about, you know, when we're looking at that 10-year plan, we make sure that we've got enough in there to make us, you know, look attractive to new visitors to the park, and we've got to strike that balance accordingly with our existing guests and preserving what they know and love, as well as bringing in new things for new visitors, so that we grow our attendance, grow revenue, have money available to reinvest, and complete the cycle again and again and again.
And the next question for James is, why does the Pleasure Beach get so much hate compared with other parks?
I think it's all relative for a start. I think every park has good and bad years in terms of what people think of them. I think that we do probably get a little bit more than our fair share, and I think a lot of the times it's unwarranted. And don't get me wrong, that's not me saying that we never make mistakes. We certainly do, and we're trying to get better and more honest in our communication, and hope that's visible. It's purposeful and intentional from us as a marketing team and from the whole company that we improve our communication and our transparency. But I think we've got a very loyal fan base, and that loyalty comes across in different ways sometimes. And when there's a particular issue that they don't like, obviously it makes its way into the comments, as it does for other parks. But I think, you know, we've been here 130 years, so there's 130 years worth of memories for people to fall back on and to think of and to pass comment on. And yeah, I think that ultimately is the main reason why we've got, you know, most people who still visit now visited as children, so they've got a memory from when they were 5 years old all the way to being 40 years old, whereas other parks they may not have visited until they were teenagers. So yeah, something we're definitely aware of, something we've taken particular note of and trying to improve our communication to reduce it. We're trying to make all the right strides. Nothing's ever intentional to try and upset anybody or anything, but at the same time, it's impossible to keep everyone happy. So we've got to strike the balance and do what we can for fans, for enthusiasts, for the mass majority of our guests who are the regular families, and that's something we're always looking to do, but it's impossible to get it right every time.
I suppose it's a measure of the passion and the love that people have for Pleasure Beach.
Yeah.
And that history, as we're saying, goes back 130 years, a lot longer than many other parks.
Yeah.
People have that affinity with the place.
Yeah.
And it's, I suppose if they didn't care, they didn't love, they wouldn't comment.
No, I think, you know, I liken it to a football team. I think when your football team's playing rubbish, you have a lot to say about it. When they're playing well and it's the same group of players, all of a sudden they're great. And I think it is passion, it is because you care and it's because you want the best. And I think all that we would like to make sure that people are aware of is that we care, we are passionate, we want the best too, and we're all wanting the best outcomes. We might have different views on what the outcome is that we should be aiming for, but we typically have a bit more context as to what we can or can't do, where we are and what's available. So, but we are always striving to do what's right for the business and the best for the park.
And we know that you, the viewers and listeners, always want the best for Pleasure Beach. That's why you're watching us today. You want to know what's going on here all the time. We're happy to let you know. Now then, what's the inspiration behind the name Evictus, asks Warwick.
Okay. So Evictus, obviously the name of the new gyro that we announced recently. I can't tell you the name, the reason for it, and that's not because I don't know. It's because I'd be shooting myself in the foot for any marketing we've got to come. So keep your eyes peeled on our socials, and we will be unveiling the story of Evictus over the next few months.
Sounds a bit Latin.
Next year. I couldn't tell you whether it was or it wasn't, Andy, because that'd be giving something away, wouldn't it?
It would, wouldn't it?
It would.
Right, let's move on then to Aaron, who asks, what happens from the start of the closed season to opening day, the new season, for maintenance?
A lot. Not just in maintenance. I think, you know, my friends say to me when we close in November, oh, what do you do now then? You haven't got anything to do? And it's like, I've got more to do now. You know, all the prep work goes into getting us open in February half term now, but, you know, typically weekends in March. But from a maintenance specific perspective, all the rides effectively get taken away off of the tracks, if you're thinking of a roller coaster, and get deassembled down to the last nut and bolt. And they are NDT tested, they're tested for their welds, their integrity, their structural integrity, their safety effectively. They are then, once those tests are all done and passed, obviously anything that needs a bit of work obviously gets the work and attention, they're then reassembled and put back on the track, obviously at the same time, tracks having work potentially, track replacement or other pieces of work, like Infusion had some work this winter, but effectively we strip everything down, build it back up again, replace anything that needs replacing in that period of time, and then go through all of our safety checks again with our independent bodies who come in and regulate those rides and give us a dock that means that we can issue it. And we do all of that effectively from December through to February, which is 3 months. And if you imagine that most of our roller coasters have at least 2 trains, and then you also imagine that all our flat rides still have the same treatment. It's a heck of a lot to get done in a very short space of time. And we're looking to move that into more of an annual maintenance rather than winter maintenance as part of a business objective. But yeah, you are not short of things to see going on here over winter.
And of course, all that taking place in the winter months. And the weather in Blackpool can be absolutely atrocious in January, as we know.
Yeah.
And yet they're out there on the tracks and repairing. Well,
yes, yep. They're in the work sheds, they're out there on the tracks, doing whatever is necessary for the ride that they are working on. And, you know, back into the business side, I think, you know, as a marketing team, we're planning what we're doing for next year, where our money's going, what we're spending it on, what our creators might look like. So there's never a day, hour or second, maybe a second, where people are sat here twiddling their thumbs, not knowing what to do with the time.
Let's move on. And we've had quite a few questions about the Grand Prix site. We'll go with this one then from Dan McMinn, who asks, is there any plans for the old Grand Prix site?
Yeah, there's lots of plans for lots of places. Obviously, we're not in a position to communicate any of them that because, you know, we have to hold some stuff back. But yes, there is obviously plans for what may go in the Grand Prix site.
I've got to ask you, because you were just saying, yeah, we know about that, but I can't tell you about that now. Do you go home at night with loads of secrets in your head that you couldn't, you're frightened to death to reveal just in case you blow the gaff?
I go home and try and detach as much as possible, but it's not an easy thing to do because it's all not new rides necessarily, but the business in particular is always never far from my mind or attention.
Excellent. Last question for now then, James, because we've had quite a few in, and thank you very much for answering them. Thank you to you for sending them in as well. This one comes from Harry, who asks, what's the operational decision behind having ticket barriers at each ride, mm-hmm. and are there any plans to change this, he asks.
Okay, so I think the decision behind having the ticket barriers for the e-ticket is one that's actually been in place for decades. The difference is that post-COVID we removed wristbands on your wrist and moved to an e-ticket, and the actual reason for that came well before COVID. So we did market research, as we always do, and we found that one of the biggest complaints that people had was the fact that they had to queue on entry to go in our old ticket sales unit to have a wristband put on their wrist so that they could scan to get on the rides. So we, well ahead of COVID, were thinking, right, well, that's, you know, it's our number one complaint. How can we address that? So we came up with the idea of, well, let's have an e-ticket. And the reason that we have a photo linked to your ticket is so that the phone can't be passed around and, giving it to other people who haven't paid for the ability to go on the rides. And the original idea was that people would have a choice. They would either be able to... On purchase, they would select, I want an e-ticket, or I'll come in and collect my wristband. And our original intention was to reduce the queues to get a wristband by 50%. We thought half will do it, half won't, fine. Queues are, 50% shorter. And that was our original goal. Now, COVID came in, and then social distancing came in. You couldn't touch someone to put the wristband on, and various other measures came in. And that, in some ways, forced the business, not just in the e-ticket, but in a lot of ways, to just jump in both feet first into some new technology. And so that's what we did. Yeah. And we had the e-ticket. And obviously, with COVID, we couldn't have the non-rider because we had caps on the number of people. And so it kind of stayed. But what it does enable us to do, and the reason it's still here today, is it enables us to be flexible with our ticketing options. We aren't in a greenfield site. We aren't Alton Towers in the middle of nowhere. We're in the resort of Blackpool that gets busier during holidays and so on. And, you know, not everyone likes all the rides. So that's why we've got the Nickelodeon ticket. And having the barriers enables us to do that, because in our code, we say, if they've got this ticket, that enables them on these rides. If they go to this other ride, it doesn't let them on. And we wouldn't have that without the barriers. We wouldn't have that without a ticket. If we were pay one price, we wouldn't have the options and flexibility to have different tickets. Mm-hmm. We now have it for the hotel guests. If you check in to the hotel, you get a ticket for the last hour of the park, which includes one ride. Without the barriers, without the e-ticket, without the technology we've built ourselves as a business, we wouldn't be able to offer that option. And so, you know, I understand how some people would prefer not to, but once you're used to it, it's not too bad. It enables us to have the app. We hope that in the app we give more information. We give when characters are appearing, when shows are on. And obviously the e-ticket being in your app means that you have to keep going back to the app. So you get that information. We're trying to hold your hand throughout the day to make sure that you get your best experience. And to the people who know us, they know where the rides are. They don't need a map in the app, which is coming soon. They think, well, I don't need that. And I get that. But, you know, our 99% of visitors, they knowing when SpongeBob's on, knowing that there's a show on tonight, knowing that Hot Ice is on and I get a free ticket because I get a notification through the app, you know, that's beneficial for them. And it's the e-ticket and therefore also the ticket barriers that enables that for them. But if you don't like technology and you don't want to use your phone, you can still walk up to our ticket centre, even if you bought online, give your reference code and they'll give you a printed version. Or you can go into guest services and convert your e-ticket into a printed version so you can put your phone away if you want to, and then you're as good as we used to be, which is where you had a wristband and scan through.
Absolutely amazing. How do you memorise all this? Company man. He knows his product through and through. Yeah, definitely. James, it's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much for coming on and answering some of the questions. Some quite pointed questions there as well. So thank you very much for sending those in. Don't forget, keep sending them in as well, because we can ask them to all sorts of people here on the park. And thank you very much for joining us here at Studio 525. And we'll be talking again to another one of our Pleasure Beats celebrities. Are you a celebrity?
Absolutely not. No. No intention to be.
There's a man who wants to make the news, but not with the news himself.
That's all.
James Cox, thank you very much.
No worries.
Thanks from both of us. Bye bye for now.